From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. More Idaho Matters right now. Voters headed to the polls between now and next Tuesday will be deciding municipal races across the state, and many school districts as well as counties have bond issues on the ballots. In Ada County, voters are being asked to approve a $49 million bond to expand the Ada County Jail, a more than $90 million project when you factor in the money already spent or set aside in county coffers. Now, the $49 million that the county wants to borrow and then the $22.6 million in interest on that borrowing over 20 years, less if the bond actually gets paid off early. However, the cost to taxpayers is $3.60 per $100,000 in taxable property value every year. Here's what that means. If someone whose primary residence is valued at the median sales price in Ada County, which is $535,000, well, that individual would pay about $15 a year for this bond. Ada County Sheriff Matt Clifford is in studio with us today to talk about the current situation at the jail. And Sheriff, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with really the barnstorming the county has done in the lead up to this election, Dre, really trying to get the word out about the bond and why or why not it's necessary, right? So how would expanding the jail as proposed, mm-hmm. right, change the current situation for not just inmates, but also for staff?
So I think you have to go back to 1995 when we built a large portion of the jail onto the 70s version of the jail. Back then, we created infrastructure in the form of a new kitchen, new laundry, new booking area, new warehouse, all those things. And then as our population has grown and our jail population has grown, we've added beds over the years. And in 2013 was the last time we added the beds.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of brings us to today of 2023, having hundreds of thousands of more people in our community. And we still run that whole jail off of the 1995 infrastructure. So efficiencies are down, the overcrowding is a problem. And so a good way to answer your question is we are adding beds, but the infrastructure is a huge piece of it. And that's where quite a lot of that money goes. Mm-hmm. Just to add beds to the jail is, quote unquote, inexpensive. But when you're trying to build new kitchen, warehouse, all of those things, that's where you get a big chunk of that money.
And about how many beds do you have right now? I mean, what would the proposed expansion look like compared to what it is right now?
So we have 1,116 beds. That doesn't mean we can house that many people.
Mm-hmm.
We're only, our operational capacity is 949. And we are typically over 1,000 every day. And then we're looking to add 294 beds. Now, the thing that we hear a lot is, well, I don't want you putting 294 more people into the jail, and neither do we. But because we don't have the space to move the people around inside the jail that we have people sleeping on the floor, people that are housed together that shouldn't be housed together. So that helps us spread that population into those areas and create a safer environment.
Can you expand a little bit on that? Because I think sometimes there is maybe a misunderstanding of what a jail is versus what a prison is.
Yeah. So a jail is maintained by the sheriff by statute in Idaho. The sheriffs maintain the jails. And it's basically a holding facility,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you are arrested on a crime and until your case is adjudicated, you would be housed in the jail. If you are sentenced to a felony, then you would go stay in the state prison out in the desert. And that, usually that's anywhere from a couple years to life. If you are sentenced to a misdemeanor, then you can serve your time in the jail. And those are typically no longer than a year. A
mm-hmm.
year actually on a misdemeanor is quite rare. But that's the big difference. We hold people until their cases are adjudicated, very small amount, serve time in there as well. Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about jail population a little bit more because the data for the jail is available online. You guys mm-hmm. are very transparent about that. In fact, just this morning, our Troy Oppie went and looked at this. And as of this morning, you have 1,009 people in custody, which is right about the average daily count over the last year. So as you mentioned, your operational capacity is listed at 949. So that means you have some overcrowding going on, right?
Correct.
And then it's broken down by the types of inmates. You've got your maximum security, you've got vulnerable, high-risk inmates. They're all separated. Those wings, according to your data, is under capacity. However, 6 of the 8 dorms for low and medium risk inmates this morning are over capacity. And at least some of those wings being over capacity is pretty regular. So with all of that data I've just thrown at you, describe a day at the jail when these wings are over capacity.
So when you have the, we call them dormitories, right? Mm-hmm. We have about 8 dorms. And when they're over capacity, what we do is people have to sleep on these little plastic cots. That we call them boats because they look like canoes that they sleep in on the floor, just inches off the floor. And what happens is we have to house them in outside a bunk area, A, and they're sleeping on the floor, B, and it causes a lot of tension in those units. And we usually see a higher rate of inmate-on-inmate violence and inmate-on-staff violence when we have people that are housed in that way. Now, you mentioned in some of those maximum security areas, there's an illusion there because there's a lot of, it looks like there's a lot of bed space mm-hmm. open. Mm-hmm. Well, the maximum security areas are all single cells with 2 beds in them. And a lot of those people that live in that area can't live with other people because they're either a danger to them or, you know, they have charges that wouldn't allow us to put them with basically a roommate. So they live in a cell that has 2 beds, but only 1 is occupied. Mm. So it makes it look like we have all this room in those maximum security areas, and we really don't. Plus, we really have to leave some room open for when things do happen in the jail. Where do we put them, right? You can't just move them to a different dorm if somebody's attacking someone. You can't just move them to a different population. They have to go somewhere where they're not going to hurt people. So you should have room available all over your jail for those types of situations. And we, in the dormitories and other parts of the jail, we just don't have the room.
So I want to talk a little bit about who these inmates are, mm-hmm. because some of the pushback to this bond, which you are aware of, comes from survey results from Clearwater Financial. Now, these consultants were hired by the county for this bond process. So the jail wouldn't be over capacity. This is what people are saying. Mm-hmm. Jail would not be over capacity if police arrested fewer people for low-level offenses or even for felony drug offenses. This is what I know you hear that. We hear it because we are one of, I believe, only 2 states in the nation that are left having very strict marijuana laws on the books. So there is this idea that we are jailing people for offenses that aren't even offenses in other states.
Correct. There is a perception that that is happening. And it frustrates me when I see the results and the comments people leave because our jail population has evolved over the years. I worked there 23 years ago and it was a much different population. But we realized, hey, our community's growing. It costs a lot of money to expand your facility. How do we recognize who belongs here and who doesn't? And we quickly recognized misdemeanor marijuana person needs to go home and pay their bills and go to work. So when people say, hey, well, you're locking up all these marijuana users, none of those people exist in our jail today. Our jail today, I think it was, I have the stats right here. Mm-hmm. Today, we were at 89% people in there on felonies. So 89% of the population is there on a felony. It doesn't tell me how many are in there for what, but I remember the Statesman asked us earlier this year, we want you to tell us how many people are in your jail right now on a standalone misdemeanor, marijuana charge, or paraphernalia. And the answer was 0. We went and looked. Yep, it's still 0. Those people don't exist in our jail population. Mm-hmm. They instead take advantage of our pretrial release, our alternative sentencing, all these things that we've created in the last 15 years to keep all those people out of the jail. Well, it's kind of caught up to us now, right? We've our population in the jail has now saturated to the point of none of these people, they don't qualify for those programs because they're not misdemeanor marijuana users. They're, you know, violent offenders or high-level felonies.
So when you say, you know, what did you just say today, 89% are in for felonies right now. So that could be anything from certain drug offenses, mm-hmm. could be DUIs, could be, I mean, you know, multiple DUIs,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
Then you have, you know, true, you know, offenders, violent offenders. So how does that then all play into this? What, I don't want to call it a misnomer, but I guess it is that, well, Idaho's so strict on marijuana that, you know, you're locking everybody up. Because that is, according to all of this, the survey information that you got, that's what people think.
It is what they think. And I've said this a number of times. It's other people's perspective, but why would they know what we do in the jail? Why would they know what the population is in the jail? If you don't, I mean, people don't even know where the jail is most of the time. And it's the largest jail in the state of Idaho, and it's right next to the mall. Nobody knows that most of the time. And so you have to really have this, not sympathetic, but you've really got to take a minute and go, why would they know? If you're not part of this system, if you're not part of the criminal justice system, if you're not a counselor, if you're not a doctor that deals with, you know, that part of the population, why would you know, right? And so that's why we're out in front of people like today. You know, I have another thing after here because we realized in this survey, people just don't know. They make assumptions, and we've always just let them make those assumptions. But now we have to get the information out there to say, yeah, that you're wrong. I'm sorry, but that's not what's happening here.
Well, I think part of it too is that not only is there maybe a misperception, but then you're also coming to taxpayers and saying, pay for this jail expansion. And I wonder as well how much we go back to really, let's go back to all the way to 2020 with George Floyd, right? Mm-hmm. Where I think that a lot of Americans could not turn away from what happens when we look at police corruption and police brutality. And then there, so you have all of these layers, right, that go back to people questioning law enforcement. And why do we need to have a $49 million jail bond to just lock more people up?
Yeah, I think that's a great statement, right? And I think we work harder now than ever before to show people in this community that, we don't do business like that. And remember, that happened 3,000 miles away. We knew that we'd have to deal with that person that did a thing 3,000 miles away. It's a fair question. But if you have contact with us, if you dig even a little bit deep into what we actually do, it changes people's minds. I've been giving tours of the jail to people who, honestly, I believe have that thought. And that feeling of, these people are our militant occupiers of the world. And then you take them even on a tour of the jail, which is a confined area with confined people, and they walk out of there and go, this is not what I thought was happening here at all. I've had legislators. I'm kind of baffled by how you interact with the people that are locked up in here. Like, well, that's how we are, right? It's a big plus for us to treat people like people because we already have enough violence inside the jail. If you're going to not treat them humanely, then you're going to have more. So I think it's a great comment. And I think we work really hard to not be that way. But it's also up to the public to meet us halfway. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to reach out, but we want the public to reach out to us as well so we can explain the things we do are complicated. They're real because we deal with people. And we deal with their problems on a bad day. We deal with their family issues. We deal with their financial issues. We deal with their neighbor problems. It can be complicated. So meet us halfway. We'll come to you. But you got to come to us, too, and say, hey, well, let's talk about that.
Well, and I think, you know, you mentioned humanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Treating people humanely, whether they're incarcerated or not. And if we look beyond the basic math of your facilities, right, so like beds, showers, toilets, there's a significant operational expansion plan as well, but that goes into treating inmates humanely. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because one example is you feed more than 1,000 inmates daily, right?
Three times a day.
Okay. So you have not had a kitchen expansion in more than 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that play into all of this?
So you get a lot of inefficiencies, that's for sure. So, I mean, we have to feed them three meals a day, period. And we are regulated by what kind of nutrition they get, caloric intake, all of those things. But when you do that inefficiently, it costs money. It might mean the food's not as good, but it really slows down your whole operation. And when you're trying to, I mean, think about it. The town I came from in Idaho is smaller than the number of inmates that live in the Ada County Jail. But I couldn't imagine what it was like, what it would be like to feed the whole town. Mm. We do that every single day, three times a day. Mm-hmm. So we need to have those efficiencies that save taxpayers money and get the inmates the food that they need. Now, what I'd like to go back to is this word humane, because I deal with everybody on every spectrum of this. What we have, the don't ever throw people in jail folks, and we have the they get bread and water and sleep on the floor folks. Okay, if that's what you think, I've already explained, violence goes up, and you also put the county taxpayer at risk for litigation. And so what I would say is, if your taxes is the only thing you care about and you don't care about these people, and I'm not saying, hey, everybody's got to hold hands with them, it's not summer camp in there anyway, but if all you care about are your taxes, all right, well, when we don't have room to separate people out and keep them off the floor, when the armed robber punches a sex offender in the nose and breaks his nose, your taxes pay for it. I mean, we're responsible for every facet of these people's lives, period. Their clothing, their safety, the food, their medical, everything. It's not Barney Fife in there where you just throw them in the behind the bars and roll the door. It's a whole community of people that need everything that we have on the outside. They have to get on the inside as well.
How do the number of state inmates and U.S. Marshal inmates impact your capacity, but also the cost to run the jail?
Sure. So U.S. Marshals first, we are, by statute, we have to have beds available for U.S. Marshals. So they're a small population of our inmates. So right now, today we had 51 of them. The marshals are pretty easy to work with. Mm-hmm. It depends on who's going to court at what time here at the federal courthouse, but we can often call them and say, we're having a nightmare right now. Can you take a few of these out? They're pretty good. State inmates are a different story. So by statute, we are required to hold on to state inmates, and they are required to pay us for that. Now, they pay us $50 a day for the first 5 days, and then they pay us $75 a day every day after that. And it costs us about $100+ a day per head to run the jail. So we do get the critic that says, you just want more room for state inmates so you can get the revenue. Well, it's not quite revenue when it costs me over $100 and they're paying me $75. So, but there's also the, hey, get the state to move their inmates out. I'm not going to say that that's impossible, but it is also kind of a fact of life that there are always this group of inmates that are ready to go to prison right now. And we will get, you know, they'll come pick up 20 or 40, and then 20 or 40 more people get sentenced and have to sit in the jail to wait to get out to IDOC. But that's what we're a holding facility. Mm-hmm. So it's now we still work with the state and we still kind of hound them of like, hey, you need to get these people moving. And they're receptive to that. But if the public believes that the state will pick up every one of their inmates tomorrow after they've been sentenced, they're going to be very disappointed. That's not the way the world works. I wish it was, but it's not exactly how it works today. But as long as we keep that relationship going, and it's gotten better in the last few years, we can get them out of there a little faster.
So before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit more specifically about the bond issue, mm-hmm. because it's on the ballot January 7th. Early voting is open through this Friday. So just for folks to understand, once again, the bond is you're asking for $49 million. So, you know, put everything in that costing nearly $72 million over 20 years because you have principal, you have interest. So the cost to taxpayers every year for the median home in Ada County would be about $15 a year. Now, my understanding is that the county already purchased land by the current jail. So you've got the land. The bond will require a supermajority to pass.
Correct.
Okay, so county commissioners say they chose specifically for this high threshold for voter approval. When we look at what the surveys have shown that Clearwater Financial did, you were kind of close to that supermajority. It keeps shifting. What are you hoping that people understand at the end of this conversation today when it comes to an expansion of this magnitude?
So what I really want them to understand is we have been fending this off for a lot of years by just adding bed space incrementally, but not upgrading infrastructure. So we saw the population rising, right? So we add the beds, but we start identifying people that don't need to be in there. So we've done our work. We have done our work as far as get these people out of jail, put them in programs, put them in classes. The sheriff's office can supervise them, and that makes room for these folks that are supposed to be in there. So I want them to know we've done the work to get to here. But we're at the end of that project, if you will. Mm-hmm. They should also know that the commissioners have prepped for this. They've been putting money away the last few years. Just it's not a ton, but they've at least been putting it away. They found the money to purchase the land, so that instead of $70 some million, it's a $49 million bond. The interest rate, people say, hey, this is the wrong time. Interest rate, it's a 3.8% interest rate. I'm not a math guy or a finance guy. I don't know how that works, but that's what
it's
we
a pretty
get.
Pretty decent rate.
Yeah, we're not getting that. So those are the things I want them to know is we've done the work. We really have to make sure that people are out of the jail and people are in the jail. And so we've come to this crossroads of, hey, we're lucky here in Ada County because so many people live here. So a $49 million bond means 15 bucks a year maybe to your average homeowner. And when you have a safe and efficient run jail, you have a safer community. I mean, your opportunity for escape goes way down. Your injury to other inmates and staff goes down. It was funny. We had an inmate, I think, talked to one of your folks the other day in the jail, and she said, yeah, I mean, maybe you'll never come to jail, but maybe you'll have a nephew or somebody like that come. I bet you'll care what it's like in here. She's not wrong. If my daughter went to jail tomorrow, I'd want to know that she's in a safe place.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. We've been talking with Ada County Sheriff Matthew Clifford about the upcoming bond expansion, which will be on the ballot on November 7th for Ada County. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudet. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on the Black experience. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.